Hello, residents of Meepletown. This is Dean.
This is Darren.
And today is a full-on mailbag episode where we're going to be answering all the questions from Eric Wyborg. Thanks for joining us as we seek to build community through board gaming. This is episode 165. All right, Meepletown, this is going to be a different episode, I think, in a lot of ways. We have tried to fit this mailbag into several different episodes, and then we realize it's just going to be a long episode, and if any, we add anything to it. So what we're going to do is we're going to spend a little bit of time today answering these mailbag questions that technically we answered, what, 2 months ago, Darren?
Something like that.
In a minute, but we're not going to do the extra what we've been doing lately, what we've been playing lately. We're not going to do any of the extra banter or anything like that. We're just going to go directly into answering these questions that Eric has so generously asked. But there was a lot of questions, but they were good questions, so we wanted to get through them without having a two-hour long episode. Is that fair?
That's fair, because we just got a letter. Wait a minute. Are we going to get some kind of copyright strike for that? Maybe I should stop. From Eric Wyborg.
Exactly. So we're going to get into this segment. Again, this was pre-recorded a couple months ago, and then that is going to be the whole episode. The other stuff that we recorded that we're going to try to fit in this episode is going to be in the next episode. But you don't know any of that, and except you do now because I just let you in on what's going on.
I'm so lost.
Me too. But the mail is not lost, so let's get to the Meepletown mailbag.
Good save.
All right, Darren, it is time for Meepletown mail. Nah, it doesn't work the same way there. I don't think we have an intro for Meepletown mailbag.
We might by the time the listeners hear this.
That's true. That's true. You had a good idea. Much better than mine.
We'll keep it a secret until you do the editing and producing.
All right. So first off, we have one entry to this. It's not just one question, but we have one person that has requested for their questions to be answered. I was trying to come up with something cooler like that, you know, with like questered or, you know, I don't know.
You just want to start this segment over?
I refuse. I want to say that we would love more questions for the Meepletown mailbag. And so if you could send those to meepletownmail@gmail.com, that would be super helpful. The way Eric Wyborg doesn't have to just carry the load for all of you freeloading Meepletonians.
Thanks, Eric. You're the man. Your shoulders are big enough for all of Meepletown.
So in the past, we have told Eric that he is old and that he has big shoulders. And we've never met him, never seen him. I don't know if Eric has big shoulders or if he's old.
We should give your descriptions of Eric, because notice they've all been from you to a police sketch artist, and see what he comes up with and put that on the Discord.
Ooh, we could play Monstrosity, but instead of drawing a monster, it's Eric Wyborg.
So now you've called Eric a monster.
Oh, man.
You were so rude.
Eric used to be a Patreon supporter, and we appreciate that. All right. Okay, let's get to the questions that Eric had. There's some good ones in here. I'm going to read through this because there's also some other non-question things related. Hello, mayors of Meepletown. Thank you for the excellent show. It's the podcast highlight of the week, every week. Darren, you're doing an excellent job. Good choice of co-host, Dean.
Why, thank you, Eric.
Start there. That is very kind of you to point out my intelligence. I appreciate that. Now, this was an interesting one. I think this it's not a question. I guess this one is one that is kind of directed towards you, I think. But referring to your comparison of Nova Roma to Trajan, I find it very helpful to hear those comparisons. If I own or know the game, I give it a reference to this new one, which is very good. And if I don't, I get another prompt to go look at which game you assumingly recommend. So going back to Nova Roma, I think Darren made the comparison that it's like Trajan because you have all these almost like little mini games going on. You can kind of pick and choose which area of the board that you want to focus on and kind of go down that path for your strategy. But anyway, he said he wants to see us do more of that. And that's one of the main reasons why he listened to Board Game Podcast in the first place. Shut up and sit down, do that a lot when they review games. It's really helpful. Keep them coming. I agree with that. I think that's one of the things I look for in Shut Up and Sit Down reviews, mm-hmm. is having those comparisons. And we will try to do a better job of that. Okay. Anything else you want to add to that, Darren?
Nope. Good to know. Other than, I will say this. Yes, Eric, I agree with the recommendations and how helpful those kind of things are. We certainly try to do that. And I know I may say a little bit more about that when we get to one of your later questions. So, Dean, as Eric said, keep them coming.
Excellent. Okay, now on to the questions. How often do you cull your collections? How do you do that? And why do you cull your collection?
Never.
I'm passing this to you first.
Yeah, so far I have not had a collection cull. Again, I've been in the hobby 4 to 5 years now. What is this? Yeah, so roughly somewhere in there. And so I have not quite gotten to the point of culling, though. I tell you what, I am really close. I love collecting because, and I may have said this early on when I joined the show, I do so much research into these games. I often do not buy anything unless I know it's one that I'm going to like and enjoy. And so right now it's so hard for me to get rid of my babies. You know, I have a hard time letting go of my board game babies because I love them all uniquely in their own way. However, we are getting close to running out of space. And I say getting close, by that I mean there is a pile already forming in the bedroom of my oldest child, who now has her own place. So this pile is growing. And so there's got to be room for these games. So we're getting close to a collection. How I'm going to do that, I do not know. So Dean, what is your culling process? Because I know you have done this multiple times and may still be in the middle of some of that.
Yeah, let me start with the why first. I think that's helpful. Why do I collect is the space? Darren's mentioned that. But when you review games, even if, so things have shifted a lot over the last year and a half, I'd say, as far as review copies. We were doing a lot more on YouTube. We were requesting more things. And typically when you do YouTube, you, in my experience anyway, you get more review copies. People want to see the game, not necessarily have you talk about it on the podcast. So that being said, I would say, Darren, within the past 6 months, we've still probably received about 40 to 50 review copies is my guess. That's maybe not quite that many, but a lot.
I have not seen these review copies. What are you hoarding and keeping for?
No, you have. You have. You got a bunch of them from Gen Con. I'm going back to Gen Con.
Oh, you're counting that too. I thought you have received, like they're mailing them to you. I'm like, you game hoarder, you.
No. I'm with you. I do receive them in the mail. I've got a couple recently, more than a couple recently. I've been trying to play through some of the small card games and stuff. Anyway, that's a big part of having to cull, okay? And so I feel like I wouldn't have to do this as much if we weren't doing the podcast. I buy a lot, or used to. I didn't buy as many this last year. But anyway, all that to say, culling is important because I just don't have the space. I've got games in the attic right now that I've got to get rid of. I'm just ready to sell. Now, how do I do that? Here's the thing. I don't really know. I can tell you what I've been doing, but it's not good enough. All right. What I've been doing is just selling at in-person sales. So when Tennessee Game Days happens, I've been selling games there. There's a Game Point Cafe does one sale a year, maybe. They set up outside of the store in East Nashville. They've got this like empty lot area. It's like grass covered. But anyway, you can set up tables in there and sell games. I did that. And I actually sold quite a few games there last year. And I'm going to do that again this year if I can. Although it's crazy hot. It was in the middle of the summer and I got a sunburn. Or maybe it was spring. I don't know. It was hot. It's not enough. I'm going to have to start selling more online or start trading things out. And like trading out, meaning you get 10 games and I get one game back kind of thing. That's, I guess that's what I'm going to have to do. I don't know, but I've got to do a better job than what I'm doing right now. Another option would be for Darren to move back to Tennessee. We would open up a board game cafe, and then that we could just keep our collection there. That's the other option.
There you go. That would solve the collection problem.
If you'd like to see a Meepletown Cafe and financially support said project, then that is how we can keep the games out of our house anyway. We'd still have the games, but at least they wouldn't be clogging up all the spaces in our house.
And what's that Patreon website again, Dean?
We're going to have to run a Kickstarter for that, maybe. That's going to be quite the venture. I would love to be able to do that, but that is not what's happening right now. Anyway, that's the process. We'll see. But again, I'm leaning towards, I'm probably going to do a sale online. Actually, if you're part of the Meepletown Discord, there is a buy and sell group on there. I've been meaning to post some games on there. And if I do that, they're going to be listed pretty cheap. Or at least if they're not listed super cheap, you can give me a, you can talk me down probably pretty easily is my guess. But I just haven't gotten all that together yet. Maybe in the next month or two, I can do that. Join the Discord. All right, next question. Ooh, we got a lot of questions here. What's your recipe for teaching board games, ideal setting, preparations, and what do you say or explain in what order? What do you say or explain in what order? Okay. There we go. Nailed it.
First try.
Go ahead, you got it.
So this one may be a full episode itself. I could see this question being a Meepletown Hall or something, perhaps, you know, how do you teach games? But I can give you my real quick thought process for that. One, obviously, it's going to depend on the game. What you say, what you do, and how you do it will depend on the type of game it is. But typically, in general, for me, it might be, let's start with the thematic setting / overview of the game. What world is this set in? What are you doing in general? And how do you win and why? That kind of, I think any kind of like thematic beginning. Some people may not care about that, but it does help those who do kind of put things in order and kind of come to the table. You mentioned something earlier, Eric, about the recommending certain games for others. If there's a certain game that's similar to this, and I know the people that I'm talking to have played that game, I will make a comparison. This is kind of like this, just to sort of help put their mind at ease. Because for me, when I'm coming into a game teach, I'm coming in trying to think of two things. One, I know when I am taught games, I'm usually stressed out because I want to make sure I pick this up and don't slow down everything else for other people. And so that in turn stresses me out some when I'm teaching because I want to make sure I provide all the information that they need, but also not take too long in doing it that it stresses other people out. You know, and so all those kind of things I'm sort of holding in my head, but kind of give this thematic overview of why we're doing what we're doing and how you win. And then, you know, we'll typically, depending on the game, like last night, you know, we played one of the games that we'll be talking about today, Bonanza. It's like if there are certain elements of the game that need some explanation or certain concepts need some explanation before you go through turn stuff, I'll talk about that. Like, okay, here's these cards. Here's the anatomy of the card. That's why, you know, this is important, that's important, because on your turn, and then kind of go into some of your turn stuff. I like going sort of turn by turn, each step, what you'll be doing. If the game lends for it, we'll walk through a turn together, or I'll walk through my turn, showing everyone what we're doing, and then try to talk about why this action may be important, or that action may be important. But again, that can be tricky, because you don't want to give too much information on the front end that they don't need yet. So there's some of that knowing what the game is, and how much someone needs just to get going. What do they need to know to make their decisions? What can be left for later? And so that kind of juggling is sort of kind of what's going through my mind as we're teaching. So I don't know if that's helpful or not. Dean may have more to say. Again, we could probably do a full episode just on this. But for me, it's thematic overview and then kind of walking through the turns and some of the main concepts they might need before that.
Yeah, I don't know if you have it pulled up or not, Darren. We should put that in the Meeple Town Hall. That would be a good,
yep.
or even necessarily town hall, because I don't know if we care what other people have to say if we just want to explain more in depth. But
right.
The only things I would add maybe are knowing. Well, okay. So I do the thematic thing too. I learned that from Rado, who does that very well. I think that's important. There are some people who, if you don't start with how you win the game, they shut off immediately or ask that question immediately. Jonathan, some people don't necessarily care about that one liner. And this is what Rado would say. Even if it's just one line of thematic, draw me into why we're doing what we're doing. For me, I really like hearing that because this will go into another question we have in just a minute, but it's helpful for me to know what's going on, okay? It also, I need to know who I'm teaching the game to. So, for example, Jonathan and I are having a conversation about learning War of the Ring together, the second edition, you know, big old game. We will both learn the rules as best we can and then come together and we can just play the game. That's our hope, okay? So that's an ideal situation. Everyone can read the rules, but that's not usually the crowd that I'm teaching to. A lot of times I'm teaching to people who expect me to teach them the game. My wife has a window of about 5 minutes at best. Not because she doesn't have the attention span to do that. It's just, I just know that she's going to care less about the game if I can't explain it. So what I typically do with her or with my kids, like with younger people, I'll give thematic nature, how do you win the game, maybe a brief overview of the game, and then I'll try to play through if the game lends itself to do that. Like I'll play through a round, let's play through a round, I'll kind of talk you through what you're going to do. This won't count, we'll reset the game after this, and then we'll jump into it. That helps me, honestly, if I know what to do, and it's not just like theoretical, but I'm actually practicing it, I think that's helpful for me. But it really depends on the group that I'm teaching. If I'm teaching a group of gamers at a convention, I can do more of the, hey, this game's like this, or this mechanic's like this, except this changes. You can do a lot more of that helps the teach along and can go faster. And usually teaching gamers tends to be a little bit easier just because they know lots of different mechanics. So for the most part, you're not gonna surprise them with a lot of new things, especially if it's a game that has like, okay, Nova Roma has a bunch of different mechanisms going on in the game. They've played most of those mechanisms in other games, if you can kind of help that along that way. So like you said.
Yeah, and sometimes you may have a mixed group of people that you're teaching. I will always teach to whoever may be having the most trouble or the newest gamer. And so I'm going to potentially inconvenience some of those that want to just kind of get going. I'm always going to go down's not the right word. You know what I mean? I'm always going to try to teach to the least experienced person at the table. So that way they feel comfortable and trust that everyone else can, you know, exude some patience while we get there. If that
sounds like mansplaining to me, that's what I'm hearing. Just kidding. No, I think that is helpful. I think it's helpful to do that. And to read, I try to read what's going on too. Like, you know, our body language shows a lot. Mm-hmm. So if I can see somebody as just like, wow, this is way overwhelming, I'll try to speak to that person specifically, not by calling them out, but, you know, helping them. Root has been a great example of that. I've taught Root a ton. And when you get into teaching the different factions and stuff, sometimes it can seem overwhelming, but I try to reassure them and then just like help them along a little bit more.
I was going to say, sometimes that helps too, depending on the game, of having them take their turn or, you know what, them doing something. So that way, again, the action, the moving helps them learning and also keeps them engaged if you're reading that body language.
Yeah. Yep. Good call. All right. Let's move on to the next one. Eric asked a question. I lost my spot. Okay. Top three games to play with. Sorry. Yeah, that's right. Sorry. I skipped over this one earlier. Top three games to play with non-gamer 60 plus people. So Darren, what does that mean? Top three to play with non-gamer 60 plus people.
So I'm assuming he's talking about people that are 60 or older and not talking about games to play with 60 plus people. Or are you reading it the other way?
I'm reading it the same way that you're reading, and we're going to answer it that way. Although but I'm really I've got a quick answer for the other.
Because I'm really curious is what kind of situations does Eric find himself in that he's playing with 60 plus people a lot? Maybe he works at a center. I don't know.
It could be. Yeah. I mean, I could teach a game to 60 plus people in my current setting right now. Maybe it depends on the age. What if it's 60 people that are over the age of 60? I would say quicks. Quicks would be, that would be my answer. That would be my quick answer. If it's younger group, maybe social deduction. But let's assume it's people that are 60 and older. My in-laws, my wife's parents, rarely, before this last year, I don't think they ever played any board games with us. When we do holiday events, we play a lot of games with her brother and his wife, and our kids are mixed in there too. We play games all day, every day sometimes when we get together for holidays. But my mother and father-in-law never played games until last year when they saw us playing So Clover and Green Team Wins, and they joined in both of those and really loved them. So I think party games might be one of the ways to go. So like Just One, So Clover, Green Team Wins, those tend to be big hits. And then obviously games that are easier to teach, and that it doesn't really change based on how many people you have. So we're not talking strategy games in here for the most part, for us anyway. I think Roll and Write, some of the Roll and Writes like Quicks, actually I just mentioned that, is a good one. Some of those Roll and Writes I think are helpful too, because you can teach them pretty quickly and everybody's doing things at the same time. I find that I lose a lot of my family members through long teaches and through games where there's long pauses in between their turns. And so I like to have games that everyone's doing something at the same time.
Do they just wander off and you can't find them?
Sometimes. You laugh, Darren. You laugh. But I'm telling you, it's just like, okay, where'd my dad go? Where is...
I keep losing my family members. What's going on here?
Those are my recommendations, though.
Gotcha. Yeah, I like the party games can be good, especially I try to think of, you know, some categories of types of games they may have played back in the day when maybe they may have been doing board gaming. They still might be doing gaming. I don't know. But I know, like you mentioned, a party game. So I think of something with like some trivia elements, like maybe a Wits and Wagers can be good for something like that. We don't have to know the answer, but it's just fun to try and do that and maybe gamble a little bit. Obviously, any kind of games that you know that are about themes that they like can always be fun. For instance, I know my dad, who's in his late 70s, enjoys baseball and World War II. You know, so some of those types of games that we can get down and play fairly quickly are good. I think trick-taking games can be really good because I know, at least in my family, all the adults when I was a kid, they all played Rook like all the time. Or spades. So any kind of trick-taking game that is either gives them similar vibes, the types of games that they already play or maybe used to play, but maybe gives a little bit of a twist, can be fun. Skull King is a very simple one to play, very similar to a lot of classic trick-taking games. The Crew can be something like that. Do it cooperatively. That can be fun. So yeah, those would be some games. Not really specific games, because again, it always kind of depends on who the people are and what they're into. But those, I think, areas of games would be good to jump in and play with that age group, potentially.
Yep. That's good. And it prevents them from getting lost, I think, for the most part. So that's a
let's hope.
Win-win. All right. So take that to the other side. And we're looking at playing games with younger children, 13 years or less. This is what Eric says. What's the heaviest game that you've played with a child, 13 years or less, and how did it go? I had to think about, I was going back and looking at the games that I played this last year with my kids. And I know that I missed some, but some of the ones that came to mind. And so I have an 11-year-old about to be 12 and a, 8-year-old. He's 8. Yes.
Wow, you're losing right family members. You can't remember your kids. Maybe you're the one that's over 60.
8. So 8 and 11. I played this last year, I think with both of them. I was trying to think of games that we all played together. Return to Dark Tower is probably the heaviest on this list, without looking, because there's a lot going in that one. Summoner Wars, Lords of Waterdeep, Foundations of Rome, and Imperial Assault. Maybe Imperial Assault is the heaviest of those. Here's what I find. Well, first off, my older is the one that does not like games as much as my younger one does. So even though there's a 3.5 year difference, sometimes it's easier to teach my youngest games only because they're more interested in playing games. Now, my oldest has been playing a lot of really quick card games with me. Last night we played Marvel Remix a couple times, back to back. He enjoyed that one. But I've got to teach him quick, and it's got to be a quick game, usually, okay? And I just have to say, hey, sit down and play a game with me. And this is going back to the psychological, you know, elements of it, too, of not asking, but saying, hey, let's sit down and play a quick game. Because he likes it, okay? With my younger one, I can teach most anything, but I don't want to have to explain things the whole time. Not because I mind doing that, but I think it takes the fun out of it. You know, if I'm, for example, Imperial Assault, we probably did play that too young for them. I kept having to tell them, here's some options of what you could do. Here are the, here's how you do this. Here's how you roll the dice for this. And here's what this ability does. I don't want to have to do that the whole time because I think I lose them. So typically games that, I'm going to say like a lower rule set, but not necessarily, just ones that they can grasp and play well. I don't know how to explain that, but Lords of Waterdeep is one that we've played a lot, and they just get that one. And I guess it is kind of a low rule set. You just place your dude out there, take stuff, and then complete these orders. That's basically what that game is. And so that one tends to be a little bit easier, and they've taken to it really well. I'd say that's probably their favorite out of all these, as far as both of them really enjoying it. And Foundations of Rome. My oldest really likes Foundations of Rome.
Gotcha. Yeah, for me, this is a tricky question because, again, I got into the hobby just a handful of years ago, just like 4 or 5 years. My youngest is 18 right now. So I was just getting into the hobby when she was 13. And so, tricky. The only one, so two potentially. The Crew is probably the heaviest game that we played when she was actually 13. Like on BGG, that's 1.9. Because I think that came out in 2019. And so she probably would have been right on the cusp there of that 13 age limitation that you gave us, Eric. But probably within that next year when she was 14, we played Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion. So I would say that would be the heaviest. That's a 3.6, you know, on the deal, because I just wanted them to experience it because I was really loving it. It had, you know, the great onboarding system. Anybody can learn Jaws of the Lion with those first four scenarios there. But we played one scenario, and that was enough for them. They did not enjoy it. That was the first and last time we played Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion with my family. They, like Dean was saying, they have to have a very quick rules teach. If I'm getting into teaching rules and it's taken more than 5 minutes, I'm going to lose them. So we don't typically play a whole lot of heavy games unless it's something that, you know, now it's a little bit easier, but you know, for me, I always have to take into consideration the theme of that too. That's going to make that go a little smoother. As they say, a spoonful of sugar helps the rules teach go down.
I don't think they say that, actually.
I say that.
Okay. I'll say one of my goals this year, without being too pushy about this, I want to introduce a couple more Euro-y type games to my kids. I guess I always just assumed my kids would just want to play the real thematic, you know, Star Wars theme games and all of that, which they do. Lord of the Rings, they enjoy those, okay? But the fact that they really like Lords of Waterdeep, that has really no theme at all, but they really liked playing it, they like the mechanisms in it. I've got some other ones in mind that I thought about introducing them to. Actually, if you have any recommendations, Meepletown, I would be all for it. But some of the ones that my wife and I are going to be playing more of this year are games like Castles of Burgundy, Glenmore 2, and looking over on my shelf, Village could be an option. Maybe not Village. But those first two, I think they can handle that, especially playing like just the regular version of those games. I would love to hear more ideas. Hansa Teutonica actually would be a really good one if my family would play that without getting upset with each other. So I'm exploring new options in the Euro-y game, like mid to lightweight Euro-y games, just to see if they like those. So Darren, you look like you're thinking through. Do you have any ideas for games that they might like? I'm trying to look at my shelf over here. Foundations of Rome is one that they have played. I'd like to dig into that a little bit more, add some of the expansion stuff in there, but I don't know. This is a Meepletown. I would love to hear your thoughts on this. What are some Euro-y games that I could teach my kids? 8 and 11.
Eight maybe too young, but one of the first ones that comes to mind, one of the first ones we taught ours is Everdell. Eight maybe a little young for that one, but I feel like the cool resources and the animals, especially if they're too young for it, playing with someone, that can be a fun decision space and Euro-y type game to play with the kiddos.
That's a good idea because we play My Little Everdell.
Ah, there you go.
And it's not a huge step up, which is why I like My Little Everdell is not like crazy, crazy light kids game. It's got some meat to it. And so adding that next step, that's a good one. Plus I can get all the expansion stuff played at some point.
There you go.
Win, win, win.
Ka-ching.
All right, let's we got a couple more. Sorry, we're stalling a little bit on these. Let's go. Three more questions. Is a heavy game to you specifically a rules intense game like Alexander Pfister with Maracaibo, or difficulty complexity in the choices available to you? So like Splatter games, which I've not played any of those, but Food Chain Magnate. So not necessarily like the heavy rule set, but here's a bazillion options for you. Maybe Feast for Odin might fit in that category. That's one I've played. And what do you enjoy or not about these aspects? So what's a heavy game for you, Darren?
I would say yes to both of those. I feel like both of those I would consider heavy games, whether they be rule intense or the difficulty complexity of the choices. I can tell you now the heaviest game that I play is probably Frosthaven. I think it's a 4.3 on BGG. And the actual gameplay of it, like what you're doing, is simple. And those are the games that I love. If you can give me simple rule set where my choices become more deep or more complex, those are the types of games that I will gravitate to or towards more than something that just has a whole bunch of rules. Now, granted, there are some aspects of that, like in Frosthaven, that are frustrating because, oh, crud, what do we do about this? Let's go to the rule book and ask. I can't remember what, because you're not going to do everything every time. And so that becomes problematic. And I don't like going back and look at the rule book over and over again, or you know, the different phases and going back and seeing how you do that. But, and again, you're not always going to do that. So, you know, it sort of gets a pass for that. But those are the type of heavy games that I enjoy. Simple rules that are quick for me to get down and play. But if I have to look up something, then so be it. A game that's got lots of rules on the front end that you got to keep up with, I'm going to be less likely to play. But I would consider both of those heavy. What about you, Dean?
Yeah, I think the big qualifier for me here is if the game makes sense, if what I'm doing makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking of some games where you do have a lot of different options. I guess one I played recently, Tapestry, which is not a heavy game, but there's different paths you go, and each of the blocks has a different option as you're going down the different tracks. I'm sure there's some other ones. If it makes sense, it's okay. But if thematically it's not there and you really are just doing stuff, that's when I start to feel like it doesn't. That's when heavy games are not fun for me, I guess. And I'm trying to think of some good examples of that. And unfortunately, I can't, because in my collection, I typically don't have any of those games. I know the games that in the past that I've reviewed, I've talked about that, but I just don't have a whole lot of heavy games. I mean, looking at my shelf, Brass Birmingham's over there. Maybe that's the heaviest one that's sitting on those shelves, but it doesn't feel very heavy. The heaviness comes in the, there's lots of different options, but the rules are really smooth. If I have to go back to the rule book a lot, I don't always love that. So to answer the question, what feels heavy for me, all of Gloomhaven, that feels like a heavy game to me. Even though it makes sense, there's a lot of things that I would have to go back and refer to the rule book. That's why I like Jaws of the Lion so much, because it eases you into that. And then if you're consistent, then you get eased into it and then everything comes naturally. I don't like a lot of fiddly rules where I have to keep going like, oh, what does this thing do again? Okay, tell me what this tile does or whatever. Like, if there's some of that, I don't mind it, but that makes it difficult for me.
And if you're going to have a heavy game, please have great iconography, because the iconography can go such a long way and the graphic design can go such a long way to making those rules heavy games a lot more playable.
Yeah. Yep. I agree with that. I 100% agree with that. That will ruin it for me, actually. If I'm having to constantly go back, what drives me nuts sometimes is not having text on the card. If the icons aren't done well, and I know that a lot of companies do that. Devere does that a lot with their heavier games, because they put it out for lots of different languages to get in one package, and sometimes it makes it quite challenging. So, yep, there's lots of different things. I would have to think, and I did think through this one, but I don't have any great examples of what is a really heavy game. I would say maybe my heaviest favorite game might be like a Uwe game, maybe Feast for Odin, where there is a lot of stuff that you, a lot of options. Caverna is kind of the same way. A lot of options of things that you can do, but they tend to make sense, I guess.
Anyway, if you say so.
There we go. All right. Andrew Bosley should reskin one of these three games. All right. Hansa Teutonica, Dominion, or Power Grid. What do you say? Which one should he reskin?
Well, I've not really played any of the three of these. Like, I've only halfway played Dominion once. So you're going to have the better answer for this one. I'll tell you what, though, if Andrew Bosley did reskin any of these, I'd be more apt to play them. But on the outset, I really have no interest in any of them, regardless of who drew them. What about you?
Maybe the answer is Guild of Merchant Explorer. That was not an option. But
no, it was not.
Beige is the rage, is what Steve would say. Steve O'Rourke. Of these, hands down, it's not even close, is Hansa Teutonica. It is. I think it has a certain element of charm to it. The art does. It feels like an older game would feel like, but I still think that's the answer. I don't dislike the art on Dominion at all. I kind of like some of the art. Some of it's not good, but some of it's great. And then Power Grid, it is what it is, I guess. There's a certain element of charm to that as well. But I would say Hansa Teutonica. Then the last question that Eric gave to us is, why haven't you played Too Many Bones yet? Get it done.
And your response?
No, I will not. I will. I would love to. Love to play Too Many Bones. I picked up Hoplomachus Victorum as a game that I'm going to get played this year. Maybe Too Many Bones should have been the one that I picked up. Who knows? But I will play it at some point. I'd love to play it. It looks cool.
Yeah, chip theory games typically intimidate me because the way other people talk about them intimidate me. So that's not anything that I have sought out. If someone were to sit it down in front of me and say, hey, let's play this, sure. But that would be why people make it sound scary.
All right, that is going to do it for this episode. Again, this was just a full-on mailbag episode. But you're thinking, how can I get my questions answered? I've got lots of questions that I want to ask Meepletown. Well, I'll tell you what. If you send us an email to meepletownmail@gmail.com, then we're going to answer your questions. Probably, it might be months down the road, but it's probably going to happen. And then you can hear our thoughts on your amazing questions. So definitely send us those in, and we'll get to those at some point. But until next time, you can connect with us through all of our avenues of social media at Meepletown Games. You can go to our Discord, which is probably the best place to connect with us and our community. You can go to the Board Game Geek Guild number 3407 and find out information on there as well. So until next time, thanks for coming down to Meepletown.
Later.